We started with Compassion about 20 years ago. We sponsored a three-year-old named Annette from Uganda. Compassion wrote us a letter and said she was graduating out of the program and would we take another girl from Uganda, and her name is Awina. So we still sponsor her. And last year we added another little girl, 4 years old, and her name is Sarah from Haiti.
We put our application in. We didn't care what gender of kid or how old they were or what country they were from, but I remember when we got the envelope and we got really excited and opened it up and found out that we had a little boy named Baruch who was 4 years old and he is from Ethiopia.
We sponsored two kids, Miriam, who's 16, and Evans. I've gotten to travel to Kenya and see what Compassion is doing through the local church in impoverished communities there. It's so awesome.
One of the things that really impressed me about Compassion International is years later, when we were getting ready to travel to Ethiopia to adopt Jeremiah, they were extremely accommodating and allowed us to meet Baruch, even though he was getting ready to graduate outside of the program.
Why we sponsor with Compassion, I just think it's kind of foundational to who we are as Christ followers. We all have discretionary income. You know, we all go out to eat and do the things we want to do. I find that if you plan ahead, you don't even really notice that $38 a month that comes out of your check to help someone else in need.
It's easy to say, you know, hey, there's a need and it's in this country and I'm going to pray for the country. But when you're sponsoring a child, you have specific needs because you get the letters, you get the correspondence, but you also have a name and a group, an organization, or a project that you can pray specifically for.
I am also longing that I would go to the university, which is in your beloved country in the United States of America. I had also an ambition of becoming the greatest doctor in this of our country, and I believe that with the Almighty God that I am serving, He will never fail me. I wish you all the best in your job, and may God shower you with blessings and His wonderful love. Share with me from Luke 1:37. Goodbye, dear. I love you much.
The Bible tells us to put action to our faith, and it tells us that if we see a brother or sister in need of food or clothes, and we say to them, go in peace, be well fed and be warm. We can pray about it, but God's already told us to do this. So just take that step and sponsor a child with Compassion. You won't regret it.
A couple weeks ago, I took my kids to a Hornets game. I took three of my kids. I took my 9-year-old, my 8-year-old, my 7-year-old, yeah, it was a busy 3 years, okay? So, 7, 8, 9-year-olds to the Hornets game, Anna Kate, Hudson, and Silas, and we go, we enjoy the game, you know, we do the whole thing, we do dinner, and then we do, like, the $8 drinks, which is ridiculous, okay? And the popcorn that's endless that we refill like 700 times. And so, we do this deal, we finish the game, we leave, it's like 9:30 p.m., and we take it, when you walk out of the Spectrum Center, it's immediate left, we're walking up the sidewalks, and we're all laughing and joking about all that we got to see, and the kids are thrilled because they were on the big screen doing some dances. It was awesome. And so we're talking about all these things, and all of a sudden in the distance, I hear the sound of a guitar being strum, and I'm listening, and the kids are still talking, and I can hear it, and up ahead, leaned against the left of the Spectrum Center, I can tell a faint shadow of a guy playing a guitar, and as we get closer and closer, I can tell I'm assuming a homeless guy, and you walk closer and closer, and it gets louder and louder, and my kids are starting to pay attention, so being the good dad I am, trying to take advantage of a good teachable moment, I pull the kids together, kind of huddle them up, and say, hey kids, listen, here, let me give you guys each dollar, let's go listen to this guy play, and then let's put some money in his guitar case. And I go, okay. So we go closer. The guy, sure enough, is playing, and he's doing a very good job, by the way. And so my kids stare for a second, and then I'm like, all right, kids, go ahead and give him a dollar. And they're like apprehensively stepping forward. They're like, drop the dollar in and kind of back up. And then we go on. Anna Kate, like being the compassionate one of the crew, says, Dad, I feel so bad. And I said, okay, let's talk about that when we get to the car, because I wanted to kind of talk about this, all of us together. So we go to the car, we sit down, and we start talking about what Anna Kate saw and the boys saw. And I start kind of pronging their hearts, hey, what did you see? How did that make you feel? And they all said they felt bad, not knowing this guy's past, not knowing his history, not knowing his background or his family. There's an immediate response of seeing something you're not used to seeing. And for my daughter, Anna Kate, she was sitting here face to face with a reality that she doesn't normally see. And her feelings, her heart is mixed in really two ways. One, there's the natural grief you feel for someone who's less fortunate than you. You just wonder, like, why don't they have it like we have it? And there's an immediate gratefulness in her heart for what she has. And she's going, I'm grateful for what I have, but it seems so unfair in a sense. And really here in Lake Norman, you know, we sit in a very nice area where we don't come face to face with things like homelessness or poverty. I mean, it's not like you're hanging out at Birkdale and you just see homeless people lying around at Birkdale. It's not like you're walking down the sidewalk at Whole Foods after you've done your healthy shopping and you're being faced with these things. We're not in our plush neighborhoods with nicely maintained medians and yards. We're not faced with these things. And quite honestly, I mean, in Lake Norman, we work really hard at not having to be faced with these things, don't we? We kind of pride ourselves, hey, this is where you want to live. The line between North Charlotte and Huntersville, it's just kind of tall. And we try to keep these things from coming up here so that we don't have to be faced with them, so we can kind of live life as normal. And really, we kind of seclude ourselves from these things. But truthfully, as Christ followers, we're called not to hide from these things, but really to look into them and ask ourselves what must be done about them. Poverty and these types of things are real issues. And you look at the book of Mark, where we've been walking through Mark, you see this situation going on, where you see the Pharisees and the religious people are trying to push down and push out those that are unclean and those that are sinners and those that are dirty and those don't look like them, those who don't look like them. They're trying to push them down and push them out. But Jesus comes along, and Jesus does something totally different, doesn't he? Jesus comes pulling them in and lifting them up. Jesus comes modeling how his people should respond by pulling people in and lifting people up. This is why at Christ Community, we talk a lot about loving everyone. Like, we want to be loving. We want to see people as made in the image of God. And we want to see people in need of the gospel, because sin has bitten us all, and we're all broken in sin and find ourselves in brokenness, the result of our sin. And so we don't want to be pushing people down and pushing people out. We want to be pulling people in and lifting people up, because Jesus does that. And we want to be a Jesus people. And caring for people is a very Jesus-y thing to do, right? We want to be doing the things Jesus did. We want to be Christ-like, so we've got to be doing Jesus-y stuff. And that is caring for people. One of the verses that I want to look at today is Proverbs 31. Proverbs 31, it's in the Old Testament. Proverbs 31. Now, it'll be on the screen. It's two verses. It's verses 8 and 9. But to tell you about Proverbs 31, if you've heard Proverbs 31, you may be thinking that's the godly woman, right? That's the Proverbs 31 woman. If you've ever heard that, you've heard this is kind of the model woman that women are to aim for. Now, the problem with that model woman, she's like 80, okay? Women, you can't get there. She's lived her life. She's wise beyond her years. She's older. She's experienced, okay? But before you get to the Proverbs 31 woman, you land on this verse, these first few verses that teach us a little bit about a guy named King Lemuel. Now, it was written by King Lemuel. Now, if you're looking to name your kid something, Lemuel would be a great option, all right? Sure. He would be favored among his friends. Lemuel. This guy named Lemuel writes this. Look at verse 1. Verse 1 says, it's not going to be on the screen, I'm just going to read it. The words of King Lemuel, a pronouncement that his mother taught him. Can I give it up? Can we just give it up for all the wise moms in the room today? Wise moms. All right. All the wise moms. We all love wise moms. Now, I had a wise mom. My mom really cared most about two things, really three things, me loving Jesus, me remembering where I've come from, And third, making memories. My mom worked really hard at making memories, even if they were terrible situations, right? They were just frustrating situations. Mom, why are you making me do this? Shut up, you'll remember it, okay? My mom worked hard at making memories with me and my brother, and she was right. So you have here King Lemuel sharing good news, wisdom from his mother. Now, Proverbs is like this. Proverbs writes from perspectives of two people, the way of the wise and the way of the fool. All right, the way of wisdom, the way of foolishness. And if you peel that back even more, the way of wisdom really means life, the way of life, the life-giving life, and then the way of death, the fool's way is leads to death. The wise way leads to life, fool's way leads to death, and even more so, these two people have names. The way of death is Satan and sin, and the way of life is Jesus. So wisdom has a name, and his name is Jesus when you read Proverbs. This is what King Lemuel's mother says. She says this, "Speak up for those who have no voice." What great wisdom. Hey, King Lemuel, when you administrate your kingdom, hey, King Lemuel, when you're leading, you pay attention to those who don't have a voice, to the vulnerable, and you speak up for them. Speak up for those who have no voice, for the justice of all who are dispossessed. These are who you stand up for. Speak up, judge righteously, and defend the cause of the oppressed and needy. What great wisdom she offers for us today. But what does it mean for us today? This text speaks to the responsibility of those to speak up for those who can't speak up for themselves, the vulnerable. So I want to just peel back a few things here before I introduce some friends of mine. First, we need to see what our problem is when it comes to global poverty. Our problem is not knowing the need. Our problem, knowing the need. How do we at Christ Community begin to have our eyes open to the needs of the world? We do this by learning. You do this by looking up from your life, from your problems, from your situations, and seeing others. And to help you, I just want to give you a few short facts from the Global Poverty Report of 2018. First, globally, 10.9% of the world, basically 11%, live on less than $1.90 per day. That's $1.90 per day, making them extremely vulnerable to natural disasters, illness, food shortages, or instability of any kind. That's 767 million people living on less than $2 a day. Every day, about 800 children worldwide die of malaria, a preventable disease that is also treatable. 800 children every day, every 24 hours, 800 gone. Around 45% of deaths of children under 5 are linked to undernutrition. For every 1,000 children born, 41 will die before they turn 5 years old. Globally, in 2016, over 63 million children were not attending school at all. Approximately 385 million children, 19.5% of the world's children, live in extreme poverty. 75% of that is in sub-Saharan Africa. These are children that Jesus cherishes and loves. An estimated 821 million people worldwide are undernourished, and each day 7,000 newborns die worldwide, most of them in developing countries. And all of us sit in Lake Norman, all cozy and comfortable, because we got all we need. Our problem is not knowing the need. Secondly, our responsibility is to love the poor and needy. This is our responsibility as Christians. Now, let me give you some basic truths of Christianity. First, as I've already said, we're all created in the image of God. Every one of us created in the image of God. Every person in this room. Every one of you that's black in this room is created in the image of God. Every one of you who is white in this room is created in the image of God. Every one of you who is brown in this room is committed in the image of God. Every one of us, every man and every woman, every boy, every girl, is created in the image of the living God. Proverbs 22:2 says, "Rich and poor have this in common. The Lord makes them all." He affirms it in Proverbs 29:13, "The poor and the oppressor have this in common. The Lord gives light to the eyes of both. We are all made in God's image. Secondly, we are all in spiritual poverty. Every one of us is born in a spiritual poverty. We're born sinners in need of hope and help that God offers us in His Son Jesus. Matthew 5:3 says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God." And third, we are all desperately in need of saving. We all are born this way, all in the image of God, all of us in spiritual poverty, and all of us desperately in need of saving. And then third, our model. Our model is Jesus, who meets our greatest need. The one from God who came to meet our spiritual poverty. The one who came to save us from our desperate need. Last week I preached a sermon about how Jesus, through His resurrection, has brought us near to God and given us new life by His great mercy. He's given us a living hope by His great mercy. And has given us an eternal inheritance by His great mercy. And He has set us free to live freely for Him. In complete surrender to Him, offering our lives, offering our purpose, offering our money, offering our direction, offering our marriages, offering our children, offering the place where we live, wherever God wants it, for His glory, wherever that is. This is what we're called to do. Having Jesus in our hearts totally and radically changes the way we live. It changes the way we think. And there's not many of us who can leave our jobs and move to some of these nations to help where the need is. There's not a lot of us who are willing to just lay down everything and go. Some of us will be called to go. But what we can all do is pray, yes. But what we can all do is help financially. A little bit. Surely we can. And this is where I fell in love with the work of Compassion International. Because there are so many organizations that do good things but not great things. The thing I love about Compassion International is they do great things that are real things that lead to lasting change and lasting impact. And when I began this conversation, I began praying that God would show us where He wanted us to really put our tent pegs at, put our stake in the ground at. And I simply asked, where's the greatest needs? And my friend Scott Limerick from Compassion said, hey, here are the greatest needs we have: Peru, Haiti, and Kenya. I said, sign us up. Our people will do it. We'll be all in. And so we are partnering with Peru, with Haiti, and with Kenya to see children rescued out of poverty. And I want you to know this. We're not just sending money. We're going to be taking short-term mission trips along the way so that we can meet the children that we are intentionally trying to rescue. And this thing works. To show you that, today from one of our countries is a guy named David from Kenya, and I want you to hear David's story from Compassion. David, why don't you come on up? Well, welcome, David.
What a blessing to be here today with you. I'm so excited to see what the Lord is about to do. And I'm so happy to have the opportunity to worship God and give my testimony about what the Lord has done to you this morning. So thank you so much for inviting me, Pastor. I come from Kenya. My name is David Wangaka. Before I start my testimony, I just want to teach you one word in Swahili. We speak Swahili back home. And whenever you go to Kenya, if you visited Kenya, you'll hear people say jambo, which simply means hello. So jambo. Thank you so much. So I'm the last born in a family of five. I have two brothers and two sisters. And I remember when I was growing up, life was not as easy as it is today, because my dad left when we were very young. And my mom was left to take care of the five of us all by herself. My mom used to work in a small restaurant where she would make probably $1 when she was so lucky. And she would come in the evening at around 11 at night p.m. And then she would actually bring some leftovers, mostly cookies from the restaurant where she used to work. And that was our meal for the day. I remember that our house was just a small shanty house. It was about probably 10 by 10 square feet, dirt floor, no beds, nothing in the house. We used to sleep on the ground, the five of us. Whenever it rains, we had to move from one corner to the other because the roof was leaking. And it was so cold at night because we used to live near Mount Kilimanjaro in a small village. And I remember one time we had stayed for about probably 24 hours with no food. And my brother, who was older, was like our dad. And he told us one morning, you know what, we are not going to die here of hunger. So I have a good idea. There's a place we can get food. And I remember waking up very early in the morning, about 6 o'clock. The five of us, we followed one another to a small town where, when we got there, he told us, this is where we are going to get food. And it was a huge dumpster. And I remember there were also other children and families eating from the same place. If you've never seen a dumpster, maybe you can see something like that. And you can see this is a reality today. We still have hundreds of thousands of children all over the world waiting for someone to rescue them from this kind of situation. I know this happened to me many years ago, but it's still happening even today. People living without hope, in extreme hopelessness, and thinking this is how life is supposed to be. I saw children die of cholera. I saw children die of malaria and typhoid, especially if they drink contaminated water. And I remember living in that fear. What if something happens to me and I die? And I remember one time my mom came back in the evening. I was around 8 years old. And she looked like she was sick. And she really wanted to give us hope, so she never really wanted us to see her as weak, because she was the only hope that we had. But unfortunately, she became worse. Her situation became worse, and one of her friend, a neighbor, took her to hospital. And we were so happy that there was someone at least who volunteered to take her to hospital, so at least she can try and save her life. She never had health insurance or money to pay for the bills or anything. That's why she had kept waiting for so long. But unfortunately, in the morning, we heard the worst news. She never made it. She died that last night. And our life became even more hopelessness. And I could not believe there was God. I could not believe we were living in that situation. Yet God was alive. But I came to be reminded that it doesn't matter what situation that you are going through, Jesus is there walking with you at that time. And I remember we all dropped out of school when that happened. And we started living with different family members and different relatives. And we became like a burden. So we lived a life of rejection, living with one family to another. And one time we are in the street. I was in the street, just normal life, eating from dumpsters, trying to survive. And there was a young man by the name Kenneth. Kenneth used to be a staff of Compassion. He used to work in a church. And he came to me and he approached me, and I thought he was a policeman. Whenever we saw a police, we would run away. And so this day, I was like, it's better for me to be arrested and eat something, better food, and maybe have a place to sleep in jail. And he came to me, but the story was different. He told me, would you like to go to school? And he took me to a church. I did not see the Compassion sign, so I did not understand what this was all about. And the Compassion sign was not there, but there was church, and it was Deliverance Church. The only sign I saw was the cross of Jesus. And he told me, we would love to help you. We'd love for you to go back to school. And I felt hope once again. I felt acceptance. And he told me, we want you to put on something nicer than what you are wearing. And they gave me shoes and clothes for the first time wearing something clean. And I felt the warmth of love, someone accepting and loving on you. And they took a picture. And I came to realize later the reason actually they told me actually to smile on the photo, it was because they wanted to protect and preserve my dignity and to show me that I'm accepted and I'm loved and I have a great future in front of me. It doesn't matter what I was going through at that time. And a packet of information, something like this was made, and it landed somewhere in England, South Wales. A family, Mr. and Mrs. A. Evans, picked that packet of information, probably in an event somewhere or a Compassion Sunday. And after 3 months, I received my first letter. And I remember it was on a Saturday. 300 children sitting together in church, and there is a staff of Compassion with a bunch of letters. And she was calling out name. I had listened for my name for about 3 months for this hope to become a reality. And finally, my name was called. And I ran in front there. I picked that envelope. And I went back, sat down with my friends. I opened it, and I read it loud to them. I was so happy and excited to hear those words, the living words, that we finally want to sponsor you, David. We love you. We feel called to be part of you. And they wrote a verse that I will never forget. And for God, he has good plans for you to give you hope and a future. And that hope that I was waiting for became alive again. And I remember going back to school. I remember being able to play with other children and becoming a child again. My sponsor told me, we have a photo of you and we are so happy. You look handsome, you're smiling. And we have that photo on the refrigerator. I seriously did not understand why my photo was in the refrigerator by then. Because in Kenya, we always put our photos in an album. And so I asked the staff of Compassion, why is my photo on a refrigerator? That's so weird. And he told me it's because every time they open that refrigerator to get food, they remember you and they pray for you. You are part of that family. And that was the connection I had with my sponsor. I remember even writing back to them, they were asking me about how I'm doing in school. And this time I had failed in math, I had a D. And then they wrote back and told me, wow, you're still doing great and they still hope for you and continue doing better. When they say that I was doing good, I did not understand because D for us was a fail, but I was like, how smart am I or how smart would I be in England if for them D is good? What do they get? But it was just a life-changing moment for me to have a relationship with them. I graduated from University of Nairobi with a degree in political science and international relations. And one thing that happened in my life, whenever I would get a Bible and Christian material, I would go back home and help and read to my brothers and sisters. And my brothers and sisters and my family, they all got born again. We actually, Compassion was able to make a way for us to reconcile back with my dad. At some point, he went to be with the Lord, but he was born again. Praise the Lord for that. And recently, I went to Kenya. Right now, I'm doing my MBA from Louisiana State. I'm the only one in my whole family that was able to have the opportunity to graduate from college. And so we are educating the other generation that is coming because the poverty cycle in my family was broken the moment I got a sponsor, the moment I was registered in the program, that all my brothers and sisters, kids, and the whole generation that is coming will never see poverty. And I remember going back to Kenya the other day and we took a photo that we had taken 25 or 30 years ago and recreated it. And my brother, the older one, this guy here, he used to be our dad. he now serves in a church as a minister in the music industry, and he was telling me the reason why he is where he is with his family and the reason why he's who he is today is because of the Bibles and Christian materials that I brought home. Sometimes we would still go back to bed without food, even while we were still in the program, but we had hope. It's not about food. It's not about nice clothes. It's about that hope. And that hope became a reality. I was able to meet my sponsor who took me through college. Her name is Patricia Mosley. And it was a beautiful moment to see her. She actually came to Colorado, where I live with my family, during the birth of my two boys. I have two boys. One is 3 and 1 is year old. And my sponsor has always been there whenever they are born. That's the relationship I'm talking about. It's a reality. And so today, you have the opportunity also to make someone's life change so that they can become fulfilled Christian adults. I urge you today, if you have the opportunity and you know God is going to provide for you, there is always room for one more. I know most of you are sponsors already, but there is always room for one more. And I pray that one day, the next probably 2 weeks, Faith Mbithe from Kenya will open a letter from the sponsor here today saying, I want to sponsor you. So if you are here and you want Faith, I can just work this and give it to you.
Amen. Hey, will you show that picture of David's family? Isn't that awesome? Praise the Lord. Hey, I want to invite my friend Scott up here from Compassion. I just want you to know, compassion works. Like, it's real, and it really does have lasting effects and lasting change and makes impact. Scott, why don't you tell us a little bit? You and I have had this relationship for over a year now. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit from your heart to the church today.
Yeah, so good morning, and thank you for being here, and thank you, David. Amazing story, and what an honor for me to be here and kind of relay to you that I've heard stories like David's from Compassion Kids from the Dominican Republic, from Peru, one of your focus countries, from Uganda, from Thailand, over and over and over again. And it was on a pastor's vision trip. I was a pastor for 15 years. And it was on a pastor's vision trip when they wanted me to go see the work of Compassion. I was sponsoring a little boy I didn't think existed. I really didn't. I'm going to tell that story since we got a little time. And you, I know you lost an hour of sleep last night, but you'll get it back in the fall. You really will. So my wife and I, who's here today, we've got two kids. And my son's now 29. My daughter's 24. They both love Jesus, which is just incredible. They're still young enough, I know, to be serial killers. So I'm not going to brag on them too much. But the truth is, as we were raising them, we taught them and we told them over and over again, you are going to be a world changer. And it's not because you're a limerick and it's not because I'm your dad or she's your mother. It's because this Jesus guy is unbelievable. And when he comes in, things change. It's as simple as that. And they knew my story. I'm adopted. I'm white, but I'm from the black community. We were the only white people on the street from the inner city in Tennessee, and it's what I'm used to. I'm not vanilla ice. I'm not trying to be black. I'm okay being white, but I feel more comfortable in that culture. But my mom had a woman at the well story, an unbelievable lady who, when she turned 50, she became a Christian. But boy, those first 50 years, whew, beautiful woman, had a lot of men, just like the woman at the well. And when I turned 30 and she turned 50, she became a Christian and brought me in, and I was adopted. I didn't know I was adopted. I thought the guy that beat us to death when we were growing up, he was kind of an alcoholic, abusive dude. He died when I was 13. I thought he was my dad, but he wasn't. He was the dad to some of my brothers and sisters, but not to me. She said, to be honest with you, son, I don't really know who your dad is. And I'm embarrassed about that. She used to say all the time, I'd rather you not share this story. But when she, what has it been, 4 years ago, she went to heaven. And I told her, I said, you know, when you go to heaven, I'm going to start sharing this story. So that's why it's still a little raw. But God took her life, and for the last 23 years of her life, never seen a life change like that before. And so it changed some things. I thought that dude that beat me to death was my dad, and I hated him. So I found out a few more things about him. I found out he adopted me. He didn't have to. You get what I'm saying? I found out that his father was an abusive alcoholic. And his father was an abusive alcoholic. And guess what his father was? So, and I tell you that to tell you this. This is what compassion does. When I turned 21, had I not become a Christian, you know what I really think I would have become? Jesus came in and said, you know what? There's a little chain of poverty that you've got, the shackles, the monster of this cycle that never ends. I'm about to break that in your life. And that's what he did. And so what happened at that, I didn't even realize back then he was getting me ready for what I'm doing now. So some things that you've been through in your life, he was just preparing you for what he's got next. Here's what I want to tell you. As you sit in this seat today, in America, in our unbelievable comfort that we have, if you are bored with your walk with God, hear me, if you're bored with your walk with God, if it's kind of gotten stagnant, I know that treadmill of Christianity, if you're bored there, it's because God's asked you to do some things and you've just looked the other way. I'm just telling you, if you will be obedient to God, it is an adventure. And you spend your time just on an edge going, are you serious, God? You want me to do that? You literally want me to go to Trade Street in Charlotte and kind of witness to some of the prostitutes there? Yeah, I do. Well, I think you're calling someone else. That was my favorite one. Now you need to call somebody else, God. And so because of all of that craziness, I was sharing with my kids. I said, I come from a fatherless home, but I learned how to be a father from God. Right? So when my son is a freshman in college, he goes to the Passion concert with Louis Giglio. You guys ever been there? He goes to the Passion concert. He comes home with a packet. Dad, dude, you're going to be so proud of me. You told me to change the world. You want me to own my own faith, blah, blah, blah. Here it is. And I said, son, what are you doing? That kid don't even exist. And what's Louis Giglio doing? Getting thousands of college kids to rescue kids. College kids don't have any money. I'm just telling you, I was a skeptic. I said, do you know who's going to end up paying for that? Me and your mom. And here's what was crazy. Those of you that have kids that are 8 to 13 or 14, you're going to see this happen in your kids when you start preparing them to leave. And I was talking to him, and as I was talking, his whole countenance started changing. And I could tell. I was kind of crushing the spirit in him. Anybody know what I'm talking about there? And he kind of, looked at me like, he didn't say this, because I'm old school, I probably would have knocked him out. But I know that's not godly. But I said, his face was like, you call yourself a believer that wants to rescue the world, and you want to get cultures to work together to change the world, and I'm doing it, and you're putting it down. You're being the very person you told me not to be. That's kind of what his face was saying. But here's what he did say. Dad, you ain't got to worry about this. I'll pay for it. I'll pay for it. Hey, it's cool. I'll pay for it. And I could tell, I said, you know what, son, I'm sorry. My bad. Go change the world. You're doing your part. Go get them. And you don't know this, but my favorite actor is Denzel Washington, right? Equalizer 2 is incredible. But anyway, fast forward to his junior year in college. Ronnie, you still with me? I told him we'd get a little bit longer in second
There's
worship,
a reason
right?
You don't give a preacher a microphone. Just kidding.
Especially a black one, right? And so he says, I'm kind of crazy because Carolina won again last night. Forgive me, all right? Now, here's all my Duke fans. They blew my phone up last night. dude, Zion ain't here, so I don't want to hear it. I said, you're right. So my son's a junior in college. He gets hired by a church, great church, to go on staff and be the college small groups pastor. Here's how they were paying him. They said, we're not going to like write you a check, but we're going to pay for your place to stay in this apartment complex where a lot of our other younger pastors are. That's great news, right? My wife and I don't have to pay room and board anymore. He went to the Bryan Business School at UNC Greensboro. And then he says, but I got a little bad news. I can't do my little part-time job anymore. I'm going to need you and Mom to do what? To take over the sponsorship of my little boy. And I went, I knew it. And what was funny is he's gotten older, and you'll see this in your kids. He didn't, you know, he wasn't like this anymore. He was like, and listen, Dad, before you say anything, this is what he said. His name's Denzel. You think you're black, and he's from Africa. How can you turn that down? He literally is from Kenya. And so I said, you're right. You should be in sales, son. And so we started sponsoring Emmanuel Denzel Mbili. And the very guy that hired me at Compassion went to my church. And what I want you to hear, and all this silliness of mine, forgive me, is how behind the scenes, God's just orchestrating things. God's like the greatest conductor. And if you'll just do what he says to do, even if you do it reluctantly, right? And so I'm sponsoring little Emmanuel Denzel Mbili, $38 a month, a kid that I don't even think exists, and never wrote him a letter, not one. And the guy at Compassion that works or went to my church, he came to me and he said, he's one of our elders. He said, Pastor Scott, don't you sponsor a little kid in Kenya? Didn't you take over Jordan's sponsorship? My son's name's Jordan, named after the goat. Anyway, he said, don't you sponsor a little kid from Compassion? And I went, supposedly. And he said, no, dude, stop that. He and I play ball together. And he said, we're not as good as Randy, but we still play some softball together. But he said, I'm going to take you on a pastor's vision trip to see our work. And I want you to meet him. And when I met him, same kid. What? It's the same kid that was in those photos. He starts hugging and kissing my feet. I tell the Compassion person, can you ask him to stop that? I'm just a dude, and I'm not who he thinks I am. And here's the thing. I actually am who he thinks I am. He said, no, you're an angel to him, and he thinks he's alive because of you. Now, he thought I was Jordan, my son, and I'm sure he was going, now you're the one that don't look like the guy that I thought was. And I had to explain to him what was going on. I was really kind of his grandfather. A little bit later on, as they leave, and this is what, taking 87 minutes to say what I should say in 2 minutes, forgive me. I'm just excited about it. I really am.
I only need 5 minutes, Ronnie.
Here's what's crazy is every child at Compassion has a book where we keep everything about them. We measure their progress in four different areas: their spiritual area, their social area, like how can they interact with other people, their educational, and their emotional. And he had this book, and part of that is, then the physical part is his health. And I looked, and he, Emmanuel, had malaria, which is a very, you heard the statistic that Ronnie read a while ago, it's a very treatable disease. And had he not been a Compassion child, he would be dead. So really, he is alive because of my son's faithfulness, right? And everything, the rest of that week, I looked at Compassion in a different way. And so I'm on the plane coming home, and the guy at Compassion says, I knew if you saw this, something would happen. And I saw something happen. If we had an opening in church relations, would you be interested in serving at Compassion? And what I've learned with God is you never say no to God. You can say it all you want. Welcome to misery if you do, in a weird kind of way. But I said, I'm not looking to leave, but if, you know, something happened, you know, let me know, blah, blah, blah. Because what I did is I couldn't forget it anymore. Not only did I not give up Emmanuel Denzel, my wife and I now rescue four other kids. We're rescuing five kids. I've been at Compassion 5 years now. That story happened 6 years ago, so that's why it's still kind of raw still. But every year that I'm at Compassion, till we've been there 10 years, that this is our small size goal, we're going to rescue another child. And I said, we're going to keep rescuing kids until we have to give up something. We have got to give up so far. Five kids. Now, I don't make Ronnie's money, but five kids. My bad. He's a pastor. Trust me. He's underpaid. But five kids. And
I just want your muscles, man. Where do you get those things from, bro?
Five kids. Yes, fighting your way out, right? Five kids, and you can ask her. We give up nothing for it, right? So here's what you're doing when you're doing this. And this is really what brought me up here to say. What you're doing is you're not just sending money to a kid. I'm not into that. Compassion taught me that throwing money at poverty will not fix it. Have you found that out? What Compassion is not a relief organization. What we are is a child rescue and development organization. And we believe, I'm not preaching prosperity gospel, we believe that poverty starts to leave your life and theirs when Jesus comes in. And we think it all starts spiritually. So the development process we have after that is why the program is so incredible. It starts with Jesus. It ends with Jesus. You hear me? Jesus. It's the most important thing. You're talking about, you're hearing David talk about how that hope, where do you think that hope comes from, right? Faith, hope, and love, and the greatest of these is, so love is a verb. And so what Ronnie is doing is introducing your incredible church, and I love your church, is introducing your incredible church to a way to show that love. And that's what Compassion does. I should have told you that in 5 minutes, but God bless you.
Good job, Scott. Hey, listen, I know I told you my story earlier about my kids and the homeless guy, and I want you to know, you may be thinking like, oh, wow, Pastor Ronnie, that's so generous of you. That's so cool that you would teach your kids that and give that guy that money. I just want you to know, that night, I blew like $80 on food. I gave the guy $4. That's just one night of my own expenses. How much money do we spend weekly? I walked through the Compassion experience yesterday with my kids, thinking I'm going to take my kids on this journey, teach them about the world, and I'm spit on the other side, brokenhearted for my own situation. And they're like, "Would you sponsor for $38 a month?" My dog's food costs $50 a month. My dog's food costs that much money. I spend more money on coffee than that. You know my coffee addiction, okay? More money. $38 to rescue a child? Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want you to know, this isn't just something I'm just yelling at you at and asking you to do. I want the Parrot crew, we're in. I want you to meet Zamora, our daughter here, our girl we're rescuing. This is her. My daughter helped pick her out. Yesterday from the thing, she's in Peru, and our church is going to take long-term mission trips. Our family's going to begin praying for her, and one day we pray that we get to hug her and meet her. Because I want you to know that this girl has been sitting and waiting on her sponsor to come through. And I want you to know right now that in 2 weeks, Zamora's going to know that her wait is over. Watch the screen.
Nama saya Halena Estibora, umur saya 8 tahun. Saya tinggal di 5 saudara dan 2 orang tua.
Tidak bisa menentukan juga. juga. Tapi sebagai orang tua, kami bersalah. Kami juga tidak mampu untuk melayani yang atas bersalah kepada Tuhan. Waktu itu, tetapi saya lebih memilih ketika pendekatan oleh gereja untuk melayani anak-anak. Dan di situ saya lihat kemuliaan Tuhan, bahwa lebih luar biasa kita melayani anak-anak daripada kita memikirkan hal-hal duniawi.
Susahkan kita ini, walaupun bikin rumah begini itu beban banyak karena arisan kita, tapi belum tutup sama sekali arisan ini. Saya terus Asti bilang, jangan terus mama. Saya lega pikiran, saya bangun cium sama anak. Asti bilang sama saya, saya cium sama dia, saya bangun, saya tidak terus sekarang, saya aman-aman sekarang.
Saya di PPA paling suka buku cerita karena rajin membaca.
Berikan kepada mereka. Terlebih-lebih Helena itu anaknya, kalau saya lihat selama saya mengajar, anaknya pintar dan priang, ceria. Dan sering tidak bolos masuk PPA.
Pertama, saya merasa bangga sekali, Pak. Karena proses perubahan, kita melihat dari penampilan mereka. Karena apa yang kami lakukan bukan hanya dengan kata-kata, tapi perbuatan nyata. Baik, terima kasih. Fungsi papan data anak untuk mengetahui anak-anak yang terdaftar di PPA, berapa seluruhnya, berapa yang dapat sponsor, dan berapa yang belum punya sponsor. Sponsor melalui tangan-tangan Tuhan untuk menjamah hati para yang punya, yang bisa peduli kepada anak. Tuhan akan memberikan yang terbaik buat keluarga ini. Ada sukacita Asti, keluarganya Asti mendapat sponsor, dan ini surat dari sponsor yang buat Asti.
Bangga sekali, tapi Tuhan yang balas. Saya tidak mampu balas, tapi Tuhan yang balas. Tidak pernah saya mimpi bahwa sponsornya Asti hari ini ada, tapi saya bangga sekali sehingga saya jatuh air mata. Terima kasih banyak, berlimpah-limpah.
Dekat dengan sponsornya, dan jadi ketika mereka menceritakan isi surat seperti itu, anak-anak merasa luar biasa bahwa itu tidak bisa dibayangin seperti itu.
Pasti namaku dan aku senang menjadi sponsor.
mungkin pikirnya ya sekedar komunikasi saja, tetapi lebih daripada itu kedekatannya lebih dekat sekali. Dan saya berterima kasih kepada Tuhan yang bisa memberikan sponsor kepada anak sebagai anak dan bapak, dan saya berterima kasih kepada Foundation sebagai jembatan yang dapat menghubungkan yang ada di seberang bisa menjadi satu. Itu kebanggaan saya dan saya merasa senang sekali.
We're almost done today. I want you to know after the first service, Jeff Wedby, one of our deacons, came to me afterwards and says, You've tricked me. I said, what do you mean? He said, you never believe this, but the child I had in my seat has the same birthday to date as his grandson Camden. And he and Sharon said, I can't walk away from what the Lord is doing here. And I want you to know, I don't know where you sit today. If you don't know Jesus, we'd love to talk to you about that after this service. But across the room, there are needs across the world, and the world is counting on us to help.